I'm Gab, he's Jules. Mutable skies over West London. Jules, it's a Champions League midweek.
It is.
There's a ton of stuff that went on. Six teams have already qualified. I'm going to get to that later because I have a few things to say about that. I was hoping not to talk about them because I thought this was going to be pretty straightforward. But
yeah,
I think Manchester United, again, the most event-filled game, the biggest storyline. They leave us no choice. I'm sorry, Eric.
They somehow
contrive to screw this up, to go down to 10 men. They're last place in the group. That's a really, really rough period.
It is. It is tough. And after the Fulham win at the weekend, which was not great, we said that. They won, but it was not pretty. They just needed something positive, really. And the first 40 minutes of the game was really positive. They scored two goals, could have been 3-4. Højlund with a brace, back home in Copenhagen, looking sharp. Rashford on the right-hand side, I thought him and Wan-Bissaka combined quite well, like on the first goal. It was okay. They were controlling that first half. And then the red card happens and it changes everything.
The red card, let's talk about this because it's Rashford. He does a thing where, you know, you sort of clench your butt and it's what you're taught to do. And you almost kind of like defend the ball by almost like boxing out, right?
Yeah,
you spread your legs, you shield the ball like that. As his left boot comes down, it comes down not just on the foot, but it almost like rakes just above the angle of the player. Some people are incensed by this red card.
Yeah.
Other people, I watched Fabio Capello saying like, they all know the rules. They all know what they're doing. I don't think Rashford wanted to hurt him.
Yeah.
But it has to be a red card.
Yeah, and I it was one of the games I was doing the analysis, the commentary on in the UK. I know it's the right call. It's I think the referee who had to go and see the screen, that VAR called him up. I think this is the right call. However, I still think that it's a little bit harsh because I think Rashford tried to protect the ball. You could see he's only looking at the ball. And of course, he's got peripheral vision and he can see maybe Yellet coming onto his left-hand side. I'm not sure, but it's the right call. Although I think he's a little bit unlucky still.
That's the directive. FIFA call it in their, you know, wonderful mangly English, they call it step on foot. And the reason that they issued this directive to get people to crack down on it, and it's not just in the Champions League, by the way. I think it's pretty much in every league. You don't see that happen very often in England because defenders don't defend that way anymore.
Yeah.
Right? And Rashford, of course, not a defender, is that it can be really dangerous because if the guy slides in, even though you're just planting your foot down, you don't know that he's there.
Yeah.
You can seriously injure somebody. So intent, it's almost like it falls in the category of doing something dangerous.
Yeah, it's a bit like Romero for Spurs against Chelsea and Enzo, for example. It's similar. It's slightly different because it's a follow through for Romero.
Romero, we'll get to that. Romero entirely different. He knows exactly what he's doing.
But in the sense that your studs end up on the ankle of the opposition player.
Erik ten Hag, unsurprisingly, not happy at all. And he quite openly blamed the referee, not just over the red card, but over Copenhagen's first two goals.
Yeah, because that's the thing, Gab. You can go down to 10 men, and we've seen many teams all the time going down to 10. It's not a reason to lose your shape, lose your head, and just collapse, really, which is what United have done.
Especially you're playing Copenhagen away.
Yeah.
It's not like you're playing
Manchester City or Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, whoever you want, but not Copenhagen, even in the kind of a slightly hostile atmosphere.
Oh, those scary Danes at the park.
Exactly. And that's before him complaining about the penalty call. He's wrong. It's a penalty. Maguire, his arm, the arm is wide. Okay, the ball is quite close to him. It's a penalty. The first goal is he's saying there's an offside and there's a Copenhagen player interfering with Onana in his line of vision. It's not the case. So I don't know where that's coming from.
It's also they don't use the cone of vision anymore. I don't know if he needs an update from a referee, but Dermot Gallagher, I'm sure, is available. He loves sharing information.
But that's not the reason why his team's just collapsed completely in the last 10 minutes of that first half and conceded those two very cheap goals to concede.
Yeah, you mentioned the cheap goal. That's, I think, what has to be frustrating because I have to say, I bought into the Maguire little mini renaissance, right? Sort of, I said, like, you know, it's gladiatorial. He's going to sit back. He's going to head every ball away. instead he concedes the stupid penalty. And look, yeah, it's nearby and everything. It's still like alligator arms.
Of course.
You're a big man with yeah. large arms. You know that the guy's winning the header. Put your arms to your side or behind your back. I know, yo, like, I feel stupid. This wasn't what I was taught to do. Fine. The game's changed. You can't have your arms that's out like that true. In a crowded penalty area. And I think that was a letdown of experience. Because I like storyline endings, yeah. I did buy into it. When I saw Maguire hitting the crossbar at the end, I'm thinking to myself, oh, redemption.
I mean, he fouled the player before, so the goal would not have counted anyway, even if it'd gone in.
Yeah.
So of all the players that United could have had in that position, it falls to him. And it was a good strike, I guess. But I don't know if you come out of this game, Gabby, Ten Hag has been in denial a lot, you know, it's never his fault, all the excuses and that. But still, if you come out of this game and think like, how, man? Because really at 11v11, they were much better. They were controlling everything. Even at 10 against 11 in that second half, they controlled that second half. Copenhagen didn't create anything until the 83rd minute and their third goal. And yet, for the last 10 of the first half and the last 10 of the second half, where you just lose your shape, your composure, your concentration, everything, which I don't know how it happens. I don't know why. For a team like this with big players, how do you lose it all like this? I don't understand. And yeah, you make mistakes individually, which should not happen. Diogo Dalot should man mark someone better than what he did on the Lera girl. There's a lot of things like that. But still, as a team, they just lost their shape completely.
You mentioned Diogo Dalot, and I actually think in United's horrendous season that they've had, and I'm not suggesting that Diogo Dalot is the second coming of Dennis Irwin, but he had a good run of games in terms of performances. If you were to...
Yeah, not bad.
You know, if you saying like, all right, I want to chuck 15 of this Manchester United squad, you know, off the top of Old Trafford,
yeah,
you wouldn't be ditching Diogo Dalot, right? Him,
I guess.
But then, in a big moment, he falls apart and you know, I think he is responsible. I think he feels terrible right now.
Even the second goal, to be fair.
I think the message from Ten Hag has to be, okay, guys, let's build on the positives, on that first half hour. Let's build on the fact that we got back, or Bruno got us back, frankly, yeah. right? And we can't send the message either that we're a one-man team and it's all about Bruno, although at times it feels that way. Mm. Build upon the positives that, hey, you know, Rashford on the right, yeah, okay, he's not going to cut inside and score, but he does give you something different.
Yeah.
I mean, is this something worth revisiting with Rashford?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's not going to play in the Champions League again this year. He will have to wait that if they qualify for next year after the red cards. So at least he will have a good run in the league. And
on the right, what about Antony?
So this is dilemma. Because Rashford is better than Garnacho on the left-hand side, right?
Yes.
There's no discussion. Even on a poor season like the one now, you still would pick Rashford first before Garnacho, okay?
Yes.
But then Rashford is better than Antony on the right-hand side, and I don't think Garnacho can play really on the right. It would be a disservice to him. So it's what whether you think what option is the least bad, I guess. So almost sacrificing Rashford's best position because Antony is so bad on the right, so you put Rashford there and Garnacho on the left. Or you said, no, Rashford on the left, this is his prime position. He has to play there, which means that on the right, then, well, it's Antony or...
I think you also have to look at the fact that you don't want Antony to go the way of Jadon Sancho. What I mean by that is you don't want to lose the player. I know he's not been good, and obviously his price tag was way too high, and yeah. it wasn't... But there's a player in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And you've committed to him longer term. You won't be able to shift him. Ajax aren't going to buy him back to play in the second division.
Nobody's going to buy him now.
So I do wonder, like, do you have to, like, part of me feels like I have to persevere with Antony. You know, Garnacho's time can come. I can use him as an impact substitute. Raising the flag 3 months into the second year of his contract when... You know, he's had off the pitch issues and stuff like that. To me, seems like you can't screw up two gigantic wingers.
So you can't
in consecutive years, can you? Between him and Sancho,
that's true.
I'm just thinking. I mean, there's a real politic to this, is what I'm saying. If he costs 20 million, fine.
But it felt to me that okay, maybe you add Varane instead of Evans. I don't know why Evans started the game, And right now, with all the injuries and everything, it looked like this, the starting 11 that we saw on Wednesday night against Copenhagen is the starting 11. He's Ten Hag's best team now.
But Mason Mount.
But that's what that then. No, but that's interesting, Gabby, because then we go, is really the Scott McTominay Eriksen partnership really that for the? Is that what Ten Hag can come up with the best in midfield?
No, it's not.
What about
it's
Mount? What about Amrabat?
What about Casemiro when fit?
But Casemiro is not fit. So take the players who you can play now. I would not have started McTominay and Eriksen. And I know the first half hour they did well.
But it worked.
But could he work over 90 minutes? I don't think Eriksen can really run a game for 90 minutes at all. I mean, he can't run full stop anymore. But boss a game and run a game, I'm not even sure he can. And Scott McTominay definitely cannot anymore. He was good on the first goal. Okay, it's a good run in the half space. Nice, he does those well. Great assist, no problem. But over 90 minutes, I mean, for me, Amrabat should start. He should play, should start. And why did you buy Mason Mount then? Why did you make like five different offers? You insisted to sign him and now you don't use him.
He's coming back from injury and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think that's...
He's been back for a while now.
It's hard to integrate Mason Mount. I think in his view, Mason Mount was going to do the Eriksen job, right? And his view is going to be Casemiro, Mount, and then Bruno in front. This was his vision, right?
But do Amrabat, Mount, and Bruno then? And give it a go. I just think Mason Mount deserves a chance now. Because clearly a lot of things are not working right now. If it was a team cruising with great momentum, you didn't want to disrupt anything... I understand, and I think that's why he also kept the Evans-Maguire partnership. Although Varane has been fit for four games now.
I want to ask about this. I want to ask about this because, frankly, if you get an older player like Johnny Evans, I'm sure he's fit and everything and whatever, and you like his experience, and you keep... If he plays as many games in a row, he's either going to have a stinker, and he's had a couple of bad games already, by the way, or he's going to get injured, which, hey, look, that's what he's injured. Yeah. I mean, it's freaking Evans and Maguire.
Yeah.
And you have Varane. Was Varane fit? Has Varane been fit these last couple of games? So he's making a deliberate decision. Yeah. It's not because Varane is made of glass, as I like to say, and everything, right?
No.
He's choosing.
Yeah.
Can you explain this?
The only reason, Gav, superstitious? I can see... No, I think it's stability, maybe. In the sense that, okay, now we can't keep changing and changing and changing again. I think for the team in general as a whole... But also those kind of partnerships together. So two in midfield, let's say Eriksen, McTominay, the two centre backs together. Even sometimes your right back, right, and your right winger, your left back and your left winger. And that reason, Gab, I find it like really far fetched in a way that you keep Varane and don't get me started on. You know, is Johnny Evans better than Rafa? No. So I don't really know why.
But also, Lindelof's not going to be injured forever, right?
No.
So. Presumably, you have a hierarchy, right? And at the beginning of the season, in your view, your hierarchy was Varane, Lisandro, and then Lindelof, and Maguire was the guy you never wanted to see again, and Evans was the guy you signed off the street, right? Yeah. This was your hierarchy. What message does it send if 2.5 months in, all of a sudden, you know, numbers 4 and 5, like Maguire wasn't even number 4. Maguire wasn't on the list at all.
He was on the transfer list. That's what it was.
I don't understand that part. I want to say something, and I'm not picking on Garnacho. I love watching Garnacho play. I love his intensity and everything. Maybe I'm too old school about this. Or maybe it's because, you know, when I was younger, I spent a lot of money buying tickets to go watch football. I hate it. I really, really hate it when players shush the crowd. It really bugs me. It really, really bugs me. I saw Nico Jackson. Well, that was even more absurd. That was after you score a hat trick against 9 men in the 94th minute on the break. Whatever, right? But I'd love it. And then, by the way, people say it's a human emotion. Whatever. Yeah, it's fine. There's a lot of players who don't do that, right? I don't remember Lionel Messi shushing the crowd too many times. Cristiano.
And it's still Messi. It's Messi anyway.
That's
so
fine. You know,
he can do it.
He's allowed to do it. Yeah. Cristiano does the calma thing, right? But that's him. That's more, he doesn't go and engage with the crowd, right? With the opposing. And these two guys, Cristiano and Messi, because they're so good, they get a ton of abuse as well. Yeah, like they are targeted by the opposing fans far more than people don't know who Nico Jackson and Alejandro Garnacho are relative to those guys, right? I don't think Haaland does that. He gets targeted a lot.
Yeah.
Mbappe, maybe a little more.
Did it the other day and you were not happy.
But do you know what I mean?
Like, listen, I
just leave it. Those people are paying your salary.
Yeah.
Right? Have a little bit of respect.
It looks a bit petty, to be fair.
I really hope they outgrow this.
And also do it if you're sure to win the game, because otherwise life goes fast at you. And then Garnacho went from shushing to like being shushed himself. You know, that's not a good look. It's never a good look. And
all right, let's talk young strikers. Rooney Bargy getting the winner for Copenhagen.
Oh, I love him.
So as far as I knew, he was just a name. Right,
he's a promising 17-year-old that,
of course,
a lot of people rate highly.
Right, more promising than the other Hoylands at the club. I don't know, but I always find it hard with these teams. When I say it's the greatest respect for the Danish league, right? They get a lot of hype early and stuff. They're playing in a dominant team domestically. They're usually technically gifted, but he comes on and scores a winner. He's going to remember this.
I would remember forever. 17 years old, Rooney's first name, of course. R-O-O-N-Y, like the English Rooney.
The English Rooney has an extra E in there.
But clearly
he was Rooney, a name for Wayne Rooney, unless his parents can't spell.
He was. They just didn't choose to put the E, but he said it himself. No, he said in an interview that he was named after Wayne Rooney.
This is like, remember Maicon?
No, really.
Remember Maicon was supposedly named for Michael Douglas, but I don't...
Rooney Bargy was named after Wayne Rooney, even if his parents didn't spell the name exactly the same as Wayne Rooney. It was that like that.
Why not go the whole way and call him Rooney? Rooney at least is a real name, right?
But you can style it.
Like the actress Rooney Mara?
But I like his left foot. He was very positive when he came on. He took on players. He scored a really lovely goal, to be fair to him, because I think he really means the bounce and everything, the way he hits that volley or that half volley, if you want. It's good. He's only 17. You know, there's obviously a very long time to go.
All right.
But Diogo Dalot should still be tighter, should be closer. And this is really something I don't understand. I know you said he'd been good this season. You would keep him at the club if you were the sporting director at United. You cannot forget your man that you're marking a key time in a game like this at this level. I'm sorry. This is a basic mistake. And the second one, he's still too far. He's where you are. I'm Rooney here. There's nobody else around. It's not like if he frees, he has to cover for Maguire. He just needs to be tighter to wherever the ball could come to an opposition player closer to him. And instead, he's ball watching again.
Let's try to give United fans some positives to look forward to, right?
Yeah.
Rasmus Højlund, 5 goals.
In 3 games in
That's
the Champions
good.
League.
He's
one
young.
Against Bayern, 2 against Galatasaray, and 2 last night on Wednesday
That's
night.
Good.
They were good finishes.
He's developing.
He's
good, developing on a bad team, right?
But tell me why he doesn't score in the Premier League then. Surely, there are not many players. Usually it's the other way around. You score in the league, but then because the Champions League is harder, then you struggle and you show maybe your limit. For him, it's the other way around.
Maybe he has more space precisely because maybe they get more counter-attacking in the Champions League. So there's more space for him to operate. I don't know. But I think that is a very valid question. Onana
sharp,
up and down sharp. Again, but... I also think I think there's a really good keeper in there. And I think if United get to where they want, it's going to be because Onana contributes. Am I wrong here?
No. No, you're right.
Bruno, we've mentioned. He's the whole effing show, to quote RVD.
Yeah. Onana, by the way, should not have tried to control that. Give it to you. Bad pass, bad back pass from Wan-Bissaka that leads to the third goal. Just clear it, man. Just send it into the bloody sea.
He's got to. That's why I said light, dark.
Yeah.
You have to try to see what's in there. I think. Finally, chances of getting out of the group. This is where they are. They are in last place in the group
with 3 points.
They have 3 points. Galatasaray and Copenhagen have 4 points. Yeah. Bayern Munich are out of sight with 12 points. They travel to Istanbul next, and they host Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Sorry, Copenhagen, and they host Bayern in the final match there. Now, the fact that Bayern have qualified, if I were Thomas Tuchel, and I think previous Bayern managers haven't done this, but I think Tuchel might, I'd be like, okay, Kratzig, Pavlovic, all you Icks, all you guys out there, you guys are all playing. Thomas Muller, you can play too, because you're old now.
Mathys Tel, you can start.
Well, Tel's actually good, but yeah.
Yeah, but he will start.
So, and weirdly, so normally I would have said, okay, it's an automatic 3 points at Old Trafford against this Bayern B team. But I don't feel that way anymore, because those guys might actually be more motivated than if Tuchel sends out the A team.
Yeah. And also, by then, when that game happens, they might be out. If they lose to Galatasaray in Istanbul in 3 weeks' time, they are United. They can't qualify anymore, because Galatasaray would have be 4 points clear with one game to go. So everybody is talking to me about Bayern, or Bayern will play a B team, a C team. You know, it's great for United.
You need to avoid defeat against Gala.
Exactly. And Galatasaray have been better than you at Old Trafford. They've been really good against Bayern. Even on Wednesday night, they were good against Bayern. It was nil-nil until the 79th minute. They had a goal that was disallowed for a tiny offside from Icardi in the build-up. All of that. It's not going to be easy for United to go away. And you just imagine the atmosphere there. Because Galatasaray will also know, we win tonight against United, then we are through. We finished second in that group. So before even thinking about Tuchel and what kind of team Bayern can put out at Old Trafford, let's try to go and do a job, you know, in Istanbul.
They have to. Do you think a draw, like ultimately this comes down to, right? People ask questions like, would a draw be enough against Galatasaray? Obviously, they would stay alive till match day six, but they wouldn't control their own destiny at that
exactly.
point.
And Gala would play Copenhagen in the last game.
And Gala played Copenhagen in the last game. Although this could be a Copenhagen game that's emboldened by the beat. So.
No, for sure. It's very exciting. But if you're United, I think you don't have to be too pessimistic. You can still qualify, of course. We're not saying that you've got no chance. But that Gala game away is wow.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough United. How many times have we said that? No. Time for some quick hits instead.
Let's go, Gab.
I hate to start it on low note, Jules, but Paris Saint-Germain traveled to San Siro and lost 2-1. How about that Rafael Leao goal, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Rafael Leao show really was, although Olivier Giroud took a big part in the show as well, in the magic
and
show.
Ruben who swarmed on any MF in a blue uniform.
Outstanding.
You call him the RLC?
Yeah.
He beat up Zaire Emery. Okay, I'm going
to
stop.
Yeah, you're going to stop there. Amazing from Loftus-Cheek, really. To the point that you do wonder, really, why Chelsea let him go when he's that kind of form.
Because he gets injured all the time.
Exactly. He's not enough in that kind of form. But still, he was outstanding. Really disturbing everything that I think PSG had worked on and prepared for this game. Although PSG took the lead and Milan Skriniar going back to Milan with a goal. Well, Loftus-Cheek, by the way, forgot, talking about man-marking earlier with Diogo Dalot, forgot him completely. And then after that, Leao was really too much to handle for Hakimi, for PSG, who were not good enough. I don't think there was much, really. Milan deserved to win and they were a better team. But PSG had some chances. Dembele was a problem, I think, as well on his side. But there was not enough from Colomani, not enough from Mbappe, and certainly not enough from the PSG midfield overall, from Warren to Vitinha. And Ugarte especially was very poor. I thought, well done Milan, that really bring them back.
Are they a little complacent, Paris Saint-Germain here?
I don't know if...
Maybe because of the first leg or...
I don't know if complacency is... I don't know, maybe you take the lead after 9 minutes and you think, okay, we're going to control this. Okay, there was just not enough control.
Yeah.
At all. And that was not good enough.
No, and it was good for Milan. Obviously, they're coming off their negative run of results, although... I thought the only game where they were really terrible was the Udinese defeat. The other ones...
In Paris, they were not great either.
No. And against... Paris, no. But Paris Saint-Germain at home are going to be...
Yeah.
They're always going to be favored over Milan.
Yeah.
So, So I love this. I love how tight this group is.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And sticking with his game, Gabby, Gigi Donnarumma got a very heated reception from his former fans at San Siro. I think we both understand why, but is this ever going to end?
I don't think so. Look, I think this matters to people. You know, I talked before about having respect for fans. I'm not saying he disrespected them. He has every right. It was a certain circumstance. He ran his contract down. The difficulty is, as long as football clubs sell us narratives about homegrown youngsters who make their first debuts at 16 and have the captain's armband, I think average fan is never going to understand, like, oh, look, you know, you're not happy with 12 million a year. You want 15 million a year. When you've grown up here, you're the captain, we sing your name and everything. That's a difficult thing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And I just think you have to accept that, right? And I think he accepts it. I did feel a little soft. He's getting also a little bald spot on the back of his head.
Yeah, he is.
But he's still really young. That's got to be rough.
I know, but...
I feel a little bit for him.
He can always have like a little air transplant, you know, a lot of
them. Like Wayne Rooney did?
Well, like a lot of them. We can start naming. Conte still is obviously the godfather of hair transplant.
Now, so this group, as we mentioned, is wide open since Borussia Dortmund beat Newcastle 2-0. And we even had a Karim Adeyemi sighting.
We had. It was decent. Although, I mean, I think Julian Brandt really was the outstanding player in that game. Dortmund really bouncing back well from that heavy defeat against Bayern in the league the weekend before. Very disappointing first half for Newcastle for sure, starting with Eddie Howe's team selection. Really? You put Almiron and Gordon on the bench?
I didn't understand. Like, so this? I assume they're not fit. Because it was funny because the watching English media is like, oh, heavily depleted Newcastle. I'm like, okay, fine. You know, no Botman, that's huge. No Donnelly, better get used to it.
No Isak,
I think that's important. But so I assume they had Knox or something.
I don't think so. I think that was just his call. And they came on at halftime, obviously. And the second half was much better. If Joel Linton scored a huge chance that he should really score on the Livramento cross, then he goes to 1-1 and maybe the rest is different. But I think Dortmund were good and they have that momentum. And now, as you said, everybody can qualify. It's literally 4, 5, 6, and 7 points for those four teams. So it's anyone's guess, really, who's going to come through.
Milan against Dortmund at San Siro, end of the month. I will be there.
Yeah, and PSG against Newcastle at home at the Parc des Princes could be a game that see them qualifying as well. Real Sociedad scored 3 times and missed a penalty in the first half hour of their 3-1 win over Benfica. Gab, you wrote that they're one of the 2 standout teams in the competition so far.
Do you want to guess who I picked as the other standout team?
Not Manchester United.
It's Manchester City, obviously. No, when I ask myself, who has been consistently good, right?
So good.
When they played Inter, they were really on. I mean, Inter really got away with it in that one. Otherwise, they've been flawless. We've talked about this before. I wonder if teams in La Liga maybe have figured them out a little bit more, and that's why they're seventh. Although, again, you know, they put Barcelona to the sword and lost on the weekend. They're so much fun to watch. Bryce Mendes, Oyarzabal, Takakubo, Barrenechea coming on, scoring that goal. As you mentioned, I think, what was it, like 15 kids from the academy?
Yeah.
Tremendous, tremendous. We ain't done. There's more quick hits.
Yes.
Barcelona fall to Shakhtar Donetsk 1-0. Jules, you want to despair about their run or do you want to praise Shakhtar or both?
Both probably. I mean, first of all, your friend Andre Christensen that defending. I know we talked a lot about players making mistakes so far on the show, but Christensen not marking Danilo Sikan on the cross is just mind-blowing, I think, at that level. And it's a great header, and it's a great goal, but Barca should have defended that better.
I think something happened. I think something must have distracted or something.
I don't know, because this is really
Christensen malfunction. I don't know.
I don't know, but it's bad. But to be fair, Shakhtar deserved completely their win. It was a poor performance from Barcelona, who only had 1 shot on target in the whole game, and that came quite late. They woke up a bit once Pedri and Joao Felix had come on, but for a long, long time, this was a very, very poor performance.
It felt to me...
worrying.
Maybe Pedri's not ready to start, whatever. But the João Félix, I don't know if maybe he needed a rest, but it surprised me that he didn't start.
Yeah, no, me too. I was really surprised by Xavi's team selection, to be fair, and I think...
And then Marcos Alonso and Christensen. Yeah, it feels a little bit like, oh, look, let's rotate against these mopes, you know. And
because they won against La Real Sociedad, we said, but not playing well at all. And then they didn't play well again for the second game in a row and lost this time, which they deserved. So.
And they're up against high-flying Porto next.
Yes,
careful.
That's right.
Cuidado.
Yeah. Manchester City have qualified, as expected, of course, beating Young Boys 3-0. Gab, what happened to Erling Haaland's goal drought, though?
Oh, yeah, when we all pretended like the Champions League is a whole different thing. Look, he hasn't scored in the Champions League since whatever. Like, the people who are going to criticize for him, they're also going to point out that all four of his goals in the Champions League have come against Young Boys, right?
And I know. But
two of those were penalties. I thought he looked lively. I thought he looked sharp. I thought he could have scored more. I thought he looked good. Even when he was missing all those chances, because he was getting in those chances. I'm Team Guardiola on this one. By the way, some great moments of skill in this game. The Foden control, that is pretty ridiculous.
And then the acceleration as well.
Don't try this at home.
Where do you stand on the Kamara asking for Haaland shirt at halftime and doing it so... Just wait at least. This is wrong to do at halftime. But if you want to do it... Do it in the tunnel. Do it when nobody's watching.
It's a terrible look. If I was one of his teammates, I would go. I'd pin him. I would do a Roy Keane on Juan Sebastian Veron to him. Put it that way. Real Madrid are also through, beating Braga 3-0. No Bellingham, no problem when you have the little magic man, Brahim Diaz.
Oh, Brahim Diaz, who got a first goal that was chalked off and rightly so for Vini foul. Initially in the move, then he scored one set up by Vinicius. That was great. Braga played well. They're good. They're really nice little team to watch.
Didn't I tell you before we made our predictions? I said Braga are a good side.
Yeah, they played well. They're just a bit naive and you know, a bit limited in terms of talent anyway. So, but Rodrigo was lovely, and his second goal, the third one, is a wonderful piece of skill. The one to Vinicius. So win.
I want more space for Brahim Diaz on this team. I'm not saying you should play him. Place of Bellingham, obviously, he was unavailable for this game, but you got to get him on the pitch.
Yeah,
more
he was
you have to.
He was lovely. Napoli could have also qualified from that group, Gab, but they achieved what has been impossible of late. They failed to beat Union Berlin, whose losing streak ends at 12 games in a row in all competition, 12 defeats in a row, and it's all because of a very un-Italian goal to concede.
Yeah, so Napoli really should have won this game. They conceded, they created most of the chances, they could have scored more, but They committed the cardinal sin. This is a cardinal sin anywhere in football, but it is that much worse in Italy.
Yeah.
Because you have a corner kick and you give
up
a goal.
And you're 1-0 up. If you're just in the game, okay.
Oh, yeah. And you're in the lead.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like you're chasing in the 93rd minute and you concede off a counterattack on that where everybody falls asleep. Yeah, that would dampen the enthusiasm. People are now questioning about talking about the curse of the Maradona because they scored a lot. There's no curse of the Maradona. You should just be thankful and wipe your mouth when you mention the man's name. This is just stupid, but it's fine. They had a performance. They're on their way there. It would have been better if they dropped it up, but whatever.
Yeah, they were still going to qualify.
No Odegaard, no Gabriel Jesus, no Eddie Nketiah. Who would have said that? I would ever say that. But Arsenal have more than enough oomph to beat Sevilla 2-0, Jules. What about my man Georgie, huh?
Oh, what a pass.
The pass, yeah?
For Bukayo
Saka. This is why he's there. Enough of this. Oh, he can't defend. He can't defend.
This is what I said. Often, sometimes the second assist, so the assist before the pass before the assist, is better, more important than the assist itself.
He's cut out like eight players.
It's crazy. Really good. Sevilla would... Terrible, I thought. Again, they had one shot, only one shot, and that was in the 94th minute. Arsenal controlled the whole game from start to finish. Could have scored more goals, should have scored more goals, maybe.
Weird but team selection, too, from Sevilla. Like, you know, no Rakitic, no Luka Bacchio, no Navas.
Fullbacks. I know, really strange, really strange. Yeah, this was back on Monday, but we can't ignore, of course, Chelsea's 4-1 win against the nine men of Tottenham.
Yeah, so basically everything happened in this game, so we can't go through it all. I think this was a game where more players could have been sent off, maybe more players should have been sent off. I can understand why it didn't happen. Two were eventually sent off. Romero, I've said it, he knows exactly what he's doing. He wants to lay some hurt on his national teammate, Enzo Fernandez, even though they're playing Brazil in the next international break. He had to go, should have gone. Yaks was like, oh, you're crazy to send me off. No, you got the ball, but you knew exactly what you're doing. Destiny Udogie could have gone earlier.
This
are bad on the ridge. But the big talking point for me, and I think we might disagree on this, is down to nine men. What does Ange do? He says, I'm going to act insane. I'm going to play this crazy high line, keep my guys on the halfway mark, and I'm going to dare Chelsea to try to score. And it should be really easy, right?
Don't tell me you like this.
Because
don't
if it's 9 versus 11, like right, that means somebody's always open. It means you can't have pressure on the ball. Somebody always is always open, so there's no pressure on the ball. So just a question of dinking it over the top and foot raise. It still took Chelsea 20-odd minutes to score.
Because they're not a good team. That's the only reason but why.
I think that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to mess with their heads.
Even at 10 men. The high line at 10 men cost you Udogie's red card. If you don't play the high line with 10 men at the start of that second half, Udogie doesn't get sent off. He's getting sent off and he gets that second yellow
because he's chasing. We could have been sent off sooner.
No, yeah, but right, he was right. Not. So he was still in the game. And at 10 men, your crazy idea about the high line costs you a second red card because Udogie has to chase the ball, chase back, chase Sterling, chase... Just, I love Ange, and he's doing an amazing job, and I really want him to continue doing it. This was not a good idea. This was suicidal. At 10 men, and even more at 9 men. Liverpool went down to 9 men. Aspers, on that same ground, did you think Klopp, let's be honest here,
attacking. Yeah.
In terms of high lines, Klopp, I think, knows more than Ange Postecoglou, right? There's a reason why even Klopp doesn't do it. Come on. And I know Ange wanted to be brave. And he said, even with 5 men, I would do it. No, you wouldn't. And by the way, 5 men, you don't play anymore. But I just didn't like it.
As a neutral, I love the fact that he decided to break from the dung heap of gutless conformity and throw a curveball at Chelsea. Saying, we're going to lose this game anyway because 9 against 11, we cannot win.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm telling you, they could have got a draw at 9v11. 100%.
Because you really think Chelsea are that bad.
This Chelsea team are that bad that instead of playing the high line, you play narrow, you play deep, a low block. You've got Eric Dier clearing every single ball, every single cross. Because that all Chelsea would have done would cross the ball. For who?
I think
for Sterling? For Nico Jackson?
I think the thinking there was he had no central defenders yet.
Eric Dier.
Well, yeah, it's Eric Dier.
But Dier would have cleared every single ball.
He lost both the central. Eric Dier, who hasn't started a game, I think, this season.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I thought he got it wrong there. I'm sorry.
Now, all of a sudden, Eric Dier is Dan Byrne, is he?
No, it's not that. But it's easy to defend that way than to defend the high line, 100%.
Bayern good to go as well as they beat Galatasaray 2-1, but Jamal Musiala picks up an injury.
Yeah, it looked bad. It looks like a muscular injury as well, Gabby.
So more space for Tommy Muller?
Exactly, I guess. Let's show some respect to Inter, Gab. Late Lautaro Martinez penalty. Gives them a 1-0 win in Salzburg.
Well, that means they've also qualified after 4 games, which is pretty remarkable.
Like Real Sociedad, yeah.
But he makes things up. He rotates. He rotates the stuffing out of this team. He uses substitutions. No Barella. No, he played this guy Bissok at the back, who I don't think had started a game yet.
Nope.
And it works for him. Marcus Thuram, by the way, tremendous. Yeah. Tremendous in this game. He's not the most fluid player. He's not even the most technically gifted player, right? I think he got the athletic genes, but not the talent genes. Although, to be fair, Marcus Thuram wasn't exactly Beckenbauer either. But such work rate and Lautaro Ballon d'Or. Atletico Madrid beat up Celtic, who have a man sent off. Yeah. It's 6-0. But Jules, I'm betting you just want to celebrate and enjoy some of the pretty goals from this game.
Wow, I don't know which
one's your favorite. Samuel Lino, no?
Samuel Lino is very special, coming in silent to his rifle and curling it. I love the Griezmann.
I knew the Griezmann
kick,
was coming.
Of course. But even the Morata second goal, when he controls with his right foot, shifted onto his left and then kind of half volley it under the bar. Pretty special. I mean, it's easier
against
10 men and the Celtic team that is always trying to play, which maybe they should have stopped doing at 1-0 or 2-0 even. The Maeda red card, I don't know where you stand. I think it's a red because he goes and the studs first. Some people like Brandon Rodgers didn't think he should have been a red. It's a bit like...
Yeah, he studs first.
It's dangerous, you know.
He's a red. I mean, I think it's not...
It's another green campaign for Celtic in Europe, though. It's not good.
Not the easiest group either.
No, for sure, for sure. Ciro Immobile scores his first goal from open play since the opening day of the season and he sends Lazio to a 1-0 win over Feyenoord. Gabby, was a very Ansari-esque performance.
Yes, it was. I think they had like 32%, 35% possession at home. This was more like... Do you remember when Sarri was at Chelsea and he tried to play, and he played Sarri ball in the first half of the season? And then they said, you're going to go and, you know, win the Europa League. And so he decided to play shutdown the rest of the way and counterattack. It was a lot like this.
Yeah, it was like this.
Feyenoord, I thought, played really well. Really unlucky not to get something out of it, maybe even a win out of it. I thought they created the better chances.
Santi Jimenez.
Santi Jimenez is a player and a half.
He's a player, isn't he?
Lazio, I think, been a bit fortunate in this group, thinking of the late goal against Atletico Madrid as well. But yeah, they're right up there, and they're in a very solid position to go through. Leipzig are yet another team who have qualified after their 2-1 win away to Red Star Belgrade. Jules, I bet you're even more excited to welcome back Xavi Simons to Paris Saint-Germain after that goal.
After that goal next season.
Who gets dropped?
I don't know.
Wait.
Can he play a bit deeper?
No, that's fine. Mbappe's leaving. You got it.
But we will sign Rafael Leao instead, so that's fine. great goal again from Xavi. Really, really nice. It was good for Leipzig for a long period of time. And I know we say it all the time, but let's not forget that when you lose Szoboszlai and Gvardiol and Nkunku and Laimer, and you still can perform like they've done in the league and in the Champions League, this season is pretty good. So well done to them. And Gab, with Leipzig, there are six teams that have already qualified for the knockout round after just four games. So with two games to go, which is pretty impressive. I bet you have strong views, though, on this. And I would like to share them with us.
I do. Six teams have already qualified. Another eight can qualify in match day five. Like they're not all going to do it, but no. Even if just half of them do. That means match day six kind of becomes like a dud, except for a couple games. A couple games are going to be tight. I was skeptical about the Swiss model. I know all the reasons around about it, but I kind of feel like I'm ready for a change.
Yeah,
I'm ready
that's good.
To go.
I'm glad.
I'm ready to go and see this. If we can prove meaningful incentives for teams to go hard until the end,
yeah,
I think that improves the spectacle for everybody. I'm not saying it's an age-old problem in the Champions League because, look, in the end, there's not going to be that many big clubs that go out. You know,
you don't think so, every year,
right? And it's fun, it's entertaining, but I want match day five, match day six to be entertaining across the board.
Me too.
You know, not just likely in Paris Saint-Germain's group or possibly United's group or whatever. Porto beat Antwerp 2-0, which means they join Barca at the top of Group H. They play each other, of course, next match day.
Yeah.
Jules, I gave you this question because I know
Dutch
your
guy.
Thing with Dutch coaches.
Another
so
Dutch guy.
So Mark Van Bommel's your victim now, right?
Yeah, he's officially the worst ever manager in the Champions League, Gabby. That's 13 games now he's been in charge in the Champions League for PSV, Wolfsburg and Antwerp. And guess how many has he won? Zero.
Well,
zero
out of 13. Couldn't have won any this year because they haven't scored any goals.
They scored goals.
That guy at the end.
They keep. I mean, not in this game. They didn't take the lead, but they took the lead against Shakhtar. They took the lead against Porto in the reverse fixture. But no, it's just not happening for him. So I know they won the title with him for the first time in 60 years last season. But in the Champions League, it's another Dutch guy for me. Gab, however, shall we celebrate that legendary aging Portuguese superstar over the age of 40, who is still setting records in the Champions League. And I don't mean the Asian Champions League, and he would not be over 40, that one.
Yeah, you kind of ruined it. If you
know,
go over 40,
sorry,
you know, I was setting it up. Everybody's saying Cristiano. Look, you know what? This is great because Cristiano can come back and play in the Champions League after he turns 40, after Pepe finally retires. Like, it's not that far away. What, like 3 years' time, right?
Yeah.
You can come back, maybe join Brentford or something in the Champions League, and I don't know. You know he's going to be motivated to come back.
Antwerp with Mark Van Bommel.
Exactly. Pepe's whole story is tremendous. I know a lot of people coming over from Brazil have a young age. If you haven't looked into this, there's people have written a bunch of feature stories about this, how like he was kind of dumped at the airport with like 20 euros and like a SIM card and said, okay, go figure this out for yourself. And then he goes on to have the career he has.
I know.
And he's the classic case, by the way, of the guy who starts out and he's kind of an unknown, and so you cheer him on. Then he goes and he plays for Real Madrid and he becomes sort of this arch super villain, like Sergio Ramos before Sergio Ramos. And now that he's old, everybody loves him again.
And he was great in that game. Outside even of the goal, he was amazing. So 40 he scores, Giroud 37 he scores. It just shows you, I think, that if, you know, for some guys, I think, have already the body for it and the mind. I think, you know, naturally, not everybody can still play at 40, even if they really are super professional and super this and super that. So I think you need the genes to be good for you to get old in a nice way. But then if you put the effort in, like Giroud, like Pep, like others too, you can have that really, really evergreen kind of longevity and stuff.
Could Dante beat his record next year?
Yeah, Dante.
If Nice qualify for the Champions League, right?
Oh my God, I would love that. Hilton, our friend Vittorino Hilton.
But Dante still plays. That's the point.
Yeah.
Vittorino
Hilton's. Yeah. Finally. I mean, Hilton had to go at some point.
Another one of your old favorites, Jules, Luke de Jong, scores the only goal of PSV Eindhoven, beat Lens 1-0. This group is going to the wire, Jules, but look, you're between these two teams. Listen, I know you're going to be tempted to make fun of Luke de Jong.
No. And
it's your buddy, Joseph, and whatever. But this was a tremendous heading goal. This was a captain's performance.
It was a great header from Bad de Jong. As people who have been listening to the show for a long time, they know he's Bad de Jong. That was a good header.
Bad de Jong, what's CM de Jong? Because Frankie de Jong is good de Jong.
Yeah.
What about CM de Jong?
That's true.
It's another level. Can he just be average de Jong and then...
He could, I guess, but it's too late. I feel it's too late. I've committed too much to the Bad de Jong. Great header, great cross by Bakayoko. Really good game, I thought. And Lens hit the post late to make it 1-1. It's not helping when you keep falling behind. They were behind against Sevilla, against Arsenal, against PSV. Every time they came back in those first three games, not last night, not on Wednesday night. It's a shame. But 5 points for both of those teams. It feels that Sevilla are a bit behind. So to go with Arsenal, who are almost qualified, it will be one of them too. And it'll be very exciting next two games, I think.
By the way, in case you're wondering, Nigel de Jong, of course, is badass de Jong.
Yeah, badass de Jong, for sure. That's for sure. The Premier League are going to vote, Gabby, to ban loans from teams who have the same owner. That would mean, for example, that Manchester City could not take players on loan from Girona, or more significantly, probably, that Newcastle could not take, let's say, Karim Benzema, Cristiano Ronaldo, or Ruben Neves.
Yes.
On loan from one of the PIF teams in Saudi Arabia.
And there are four PIF teams, of course, in Saudi. This is an interesting one because, you know, so many teams love this whole multi-club ownership thing. Yeah. In fact, I was shocked. There are 11 of the 20 teams in the Premier League own another club, either fully or partially, in another European league.
11? Wow.
There's 11. I mean... I was really surprised it was that high. And obviously, there's teams in the Championship that do as well. And by the way, that's not counting Manchester United because Jim Ratcliffe hasn't taken over share, but obviously they would own Nice at that stage. So the fact that they're considering this when a majority of clubs, it would presumably hurt them or curtail them, suggests to me that they're really concerned about Newcastle taking advantage of this.
Clearly.
Maybe excessively concerned because I kind of feel that, you know, if you're MBS or whoever runs PIF, you're saying, no, guys, we're paying you a lot of money to be here in Saudi to push the sport in Saudi Arabia, not to go and help Newcastle qualify for the Europa League.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I think the deal kind of makes sense. But if it makes sense, I'm in two minds about this. What's the point of multi-club ownership if you can't do this, right? What's the point if Chelsea decide to take David Fofana back from Union Berlin? What, they're not, I guess they don't own Union Berlin.
It's not the same, but let's say he plays for Strasbourg.
They want to stop this. If they want to stop it, I think it's something they should seriously look at.
Yeah.
Real Madrid keep getting those contracts done. Eduardo Camavinga is now locked up until 2029. Jules, is his long-term future in midfield or at left back?
That's a good question. I thought he was, again, very good last night, on Wednesday night, in midfield. I think he's so amazing. He can do anywhere. The release clause, which means nothing, as you keep telling us, is still a billion. It must be weird to have a billion release clause.
It's not real.
Well, no, I know it's not real, but still. I mean... Is Ferland Mendy hoping that so we've had Valverde, Rodrigo, Vinicius, Camavinga, Chouameni, and I think that's all for now. Is Ferland saying, "What about me? Hey, am I next? Me? No, I don't think it'd be you, Ferland."
But by the way, Chouameni, Camavinga, Bellingham, and Valverde, if you want to include him too, or if you consider him as a winger for the future.
Yeah.
I mean, knowing that this is set next 10 years, I'm sorted. Vini. And Rodrigo as well, at least part of the strike force.
On his way.
Endrick on his way. Now you just got to, you know, find some young'uns at the back and you're good.
Yeah, exactly. Finnish billionaire Tomas Iliakas has reportedly raised $2.5 billion to buy Inter Milan. And he says that signing Kylian Mbappe will be more than just a dream. I'm sure it would, Tomas. I'm sure it would. Gab, are you very excited?
You know, it would be more than just a dream. He's implying it's a realistic possibility.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, I think Zilliatos...
Does he know that there's two teams in Milan, and unfortunately for him, Inter is not the one that Kylian Mbappe prefers?
Kylian Mbappe prefers Real Madrid to Paris Saint-Germain because he was a fan of the Cristiano Ronaldo culture.
He was still a PSG fan too.
But whatever. But I think I have fascinated by it. For those who don't remember, this is the man who... When the Glazers put Arsenal up for sale and engaged the Rain Group and said, okay, this is the process, interested bidders, write in, blah, blah, blah. He's the guy who says, oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to issue a press release telling everybody that I'm making an offer for Manchester United. This guy's obviously, I presume he's a wealthy man. I don't know if he should keep calling himself a billionaire. I don't know if he is or not.
What would we call him, a billionaire, if he was not a billionaire?
Because it's all nonsense on paper. By the way, this is a whole digression I'm sensing. A lot of these so-called billionaires, a lot of them aren't liquid at all.
It's the shares that they own and things like that. Yeah, no,
yeah. If you look at it that way, Elon Musk shares on Twitter, given what's happened there, like they've wiped like $20 billion off his net worth. You know, but this guy. Way too freaking public. When you talk too much.
Yes. It's when you talk too much. Right. We know that now. We know that in business.
Yeah. Look, it's one of two things. Either you come out, you talk too much, and then all the fans say, yes, Iliakis, we've been dreaming of you. Get rid of the Zhangs. Or, and then you can kind of power play your way into it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, also this fact that he's raising $2.5 billion suggests to me.
It's not his.
He doesn't have $2.5 billion. Yeah. He's going knocking on doors.
No, but that's okay. We've seen consortium before buying football clubs.
Yeah, I think he's raised $2.5 billion since, frankly, because in the current climate, if he can raise $2.5 billion to buy a loss-making football club, then he's a genius. Because right now, there's no money out there.
Yeah.
Nobody can do this. And this Mbappe thing, come on, man. Yeah. What?
You said it must be realistic if you said it.
It's got to be realistic. In the Mbappe, Thuram, Lautaro partnership next season. I'm on board with that. I'm on board with that. With Thomas Zilliakis. Sorry, Thomas, I don't mean to make fun of you, but so the way you've been portrayed in the media, you come across like a bit of a shyster. Sorry. That's how you come across. If you are not, find me, call us, come on to our show. Tell us why. This is realistic. This is going to happen.
How did you call him? What did you just say?
A shyster. Like a snake oil guy. Like a guy who talks a lot and then never executes. I don't know. I'm not saying he's a con man.
Thomas Shyster's
ridiculous. But I'm just saying, like, you know, he comes out of nowhere and then boom, and then kind of disappears again. And maybe while we're at it, you can also tell us why you didn't email those nice people at the Rain Group when you pretended like you were going to buy Man United.
Yeah.
Endrick has been called up to the Brazil national team for their upcoming games against Colombia and Argentina. Jules, he's now 17. He has started all of 15 league matches for Palmeiras. Too much too soon?
I don't think so. Well, you know where I stand on this. I think he's great. He might not play at all, but the experience of being there around all those superstars, the great players, it's great for him. It costs you nothing if you find Fernando Diniz to bring him with you into camp. For 10 days. He's on great form. We saw the two goals he scored against Botafogo that were outstanding. He's clearly very, very talented. So maybe it's a little bit early. But you take that. And by the way, that call-up will cost Real Madrid 1,250,000 euros, because in the contract that when they signed him for what, 45 million it was, there was a clause that said on his first call-up, they will have to pay Palmeiras that 1.2 million euros. So maybe it come a little bit earlier than what they thought.
Yeah, I would hope that they've budgeted for it. But I totally agree with you. And in fact, I like this. A bunch of national team coaches do this. Like when they put the senior team together.
Mancini did that.
Yeah, he'll bring in like sometimes it's 16, 17-year-olds just to make up the numbers, to train with the first team. You know, if they're not needed for their U18 or I guess U20 in Endrick's case,
completely.
Why not?
I agree. King Charles gave a speech to Parliament which paved the way for something called the Football Governance Bill, Gab. This would set up an independent regulator for football in England. What's this about?
So I know this is going to sound really, really boring when I mention Parliament and King Charles in the same sentence, but this could have a big impact in England because essentially This was proposed a few years ago. It seems to have support from both the party in government right now, the Conservative Party and the opposition, the Labour Party. And the idea is basically what they're saying is, like, football, the sport, is a public good. So, yes, it's privately held, privately owned, privately run. The Premier League is its own entity and so on. But it is a public utility. It is a public good. It's a little bit like your electricity company. There's a whole bunch of, and this isn't just in England, this is in many countries, I think in the US as well, right? You have an electricity company, you have a bunch of them, they all compete and you choose one or the other, but there is a regulator that says, okay, electricity company, you have to provide, you have to meet these standards of safety, you have to provide this this level of service, you can't go and overcharge people. Yeah. Again, most places in the world are like this. So they're, I think this is pretty much unprecedented that they're treating the football industry in this way. I think they're going to have oversight in terms, or they're going to have some level of oversight when it happens in terms of new owners coming in and piling on debt onto a club, for example, putting a club's sustainability at risk by being reckless. Maybe something as well with the owners and directors test, which right now is the purview of the Premier League and the Football League. Premier League are saying, we welcome this and we await the details. No, they don't welcome it because nobody likes to have somebody looking over their shoulder. Yeah. I think, though, it's probably a good thing. And I wonder if other countries are going to move forward with this. Daily Mail reporting that Chelsea are blaming co-sporting director Paul Winstanley for failing to give Emma Hayes a contract extension, which is why she decided to move to the U.S. women's job. Yeah, supposedly, this is obviously somebody who does not like Paul Winstanley at the club. Saying like, all right, so they told like, hey, Paul, go sort out Emma's contract.
So what, did Paul say, I don't want to give her a new one?
Or no, he said he
could not agree with her.
They didn't agree, and it slow rolled, and so she decided, all right, I'm off to the US. Does this seem plausible to you?
Of course it is. Negotiations in contract like this, especially when Emma Hayes is in a very strong position because she's one of the best club manager in women's football. Probably even in men's football and women's football together too. So she would be in a very strong position to say to Chelsea, okay, I'm happy to stay, but this is my term, these are my conditions. I would be very surprised, and unless it's a money thing, but I would not think that Emma Hayes' current wages or potential wages in a new contract would make that much difference for a club like Chelsea when you see how the men are paid. But if you let her go, if she wanted to stay really, and you wanted her to stay, and you could not find an agreement, and that's why she left, and you now find yourself without the best coach that you've ever had, certainly in your women's side, and one of the best in the world, I find that mind-blowing.
So I haven't spoken to Emma about this, so I don't know. But viewed from the outside, this story doesn't pass the smell test, because I would find it really difficult to accept that, you know, after 10, 11 years, however long she's been at the club,
even more than that,
that she says, oh, look, they're not giving me a raise or whatever I want, so I'm going to look for a new job. Hey, look, here's the U.S. women's national team. I just don't buy that.
That's not her, you mean? Yeah.
No, I think she said, I think they didn't negotiate. She listened to them. I don't think it's plausible that she asked for the moon. I think Chelsea made an offer, but I think ultimately she said, look, time for a new experience. She's 47 years old.
Oh, so it's nobody's fault then. She wanted to leave. She didn't want to stay.
I mean, she can speak for herself, but I find it more plausible that she was ready to move on, having done this for so long. You know, having seen the Women's World Cup grow, especially in the U.S., you take over a talented team. I mean, that's how I see it. I mean, what else?
Me too.
She's achieved everything she can at Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly.
So, so I'm not blaming Paul Winstanley here. Unless, of course, Paul, I make the same offer made to your buddy Thomas Liakis. If you want to come on the Gab and Jewel show
and say, Paul,
it's entirely my fault. Or sorry, it says like, hi, I'm Paul. And it's entirely my fault that Emma's gone. But I don't believe this.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Fiorentina have been hit by a partial stadium ban for discriminatory abuse directed at Weston McKennie, Moise Kean and Dusan Vlahovic in their 1-0 defeat to Juve on Sunday night.
Yeah, so obviously this covers both racist abuse towards McKennie and Moise Kean, who obviously are people of color, and Dusan Vlahovic, who is Slavic and gets called a gypsy. The interesting thing to me here is that the part of the stadium that's being shut down is a part of the stadium where the ultras weren't there because they were boycotting the game because they didn't think the game should go ahead and they were busy with the flood cleanup. So other people sat in that stand. I was unaware of it on the night. It didn't get much attention the next day. Obviously, it did happen. Yeah. Obviously, these players heard it. Obviously, the observers from the Italian FA did their job in reporting that, and I can only applaud that. I do wonder about shutting it down and then suspending it. Basically, it means that if it happens again, then they will tack this on top. But it's good that they're taking it seriously. I feel a little bit for the Fiorentina ultras who are out doing community service and they come back and they're doing good things. And
You know,
they weren't even there. Nuno Espirito Santo has been sacked as coach of El Ittihad after they lost to Al Quwa Al Jawa, who, okay, pardon my complete ignorance about Iraqi football. I'm assuming this is one team with two names.
Yeah, I think so.
They lost to them 2-0. In the Asian Champions League. Now, according to reports in the Saudi daily Al Riyadiyah, who I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest could be from Riyadh, Nuno also clashed badly with your boy, Karim Benzema, the artist formerly known as Karim the Dream.
Karim the Dream, he's still the dream. I think to put it nicely, they didn't really see eye to eye.
But why? Nuno's such a wonderful man.
Such a wonderful, full of energy, full of smiles and love and passion and all of that. I don't think Karim was the only one not to get on with Nuno. There's obviously a few things that have been mentioned, like Nuno called him lazy, which really, I mean, I know Karim is not perfect by far, but if there's a striker who plays for the team, it's really him. Yeah. So I'm not sure where the laziness...
Yeah, Benzema reportedly replied, look, don't single me out. Talk to the entire team. We're a team. We win or lose together.
Yeah.
Which didn't help. I also wonder, and I think this is an issue for Nuno, is because of his perception, because of who his agent is, there is a sense, I think, among a growing number of players that he gets these fancy jobs because... he's looked after by Uncle George.
Yeah.
And somebody like Karim Benzema, a hard scrabble background, he's not going to respect that.
Definitely not. And he's just not going to accept the incompetence, I think, and the lack of ability. Because that's, you know, Nuno is not really a top, top coach, right? We agree on that.
No.
So this was always coming, I think. And I don't think we know who's replacing him just yet. So it'd be interesting to see. The Premier League would like VARs permanently assigned to refereeing teams to improve consistency. Is this a good idea? Did I even ask that question right?
Yeah. So basically...
So what does that mean? The same VAR team for the same...
So the same referee so that, you know, they develop chemistry and get along better, blah, blah, blah. This is reported. I'm sure the Premier League would like that. The problem for the PGMOL is if you're going to do this, as you know, they alternate VARs and referees,
the pitch,
right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you referee in the pitch, sometimes you become a VAR. This would basically mean that the guy on the pitch is always on the pitch and the VAR is always a VAR.
They don't want that, no? They don't want a specialized VAR guy who only does VAR.
They're not ready for that.
Okay.
I think down the road, and look, this isn't just in England, this is everywhere. I think down the road, what they should be doing, and I think it's what both UEFA and FIFA would like to see, is... we take the guy who's like a referee in the third tier or whatever, and we say, dude, you don't have the personality to become, you'll never become a top flight referee, but you see things really, really well. Like your game management is terrible, but you see things really well or whatever. So let's train you to be a VAR in the top flight because it's a different skill set.
Yeah.
That's what I would like to see, to create a whole generation of specialist VARs who are trained, and then maybe you can look at pairing them up with the same referees.
Yeah.
That might make sense. But right now, I think that's kind of the least of the
problems.
No, I don't think we're ready for that yet. Oh, you like this one?
Yes.
Sevilla director of football, Victor Horta, who was previously at Leeds, has suggested a summer joint Premier League Liga tournament with the champions facing each other, the second place team facing each other, and so on, right down to number 20.
Yeah.
And he says maybe they could do this in the U.S. And he even goes so far as saying maybe it's 3 points for a win, 2 points for 2 points for a win on penalty, 1 point for a defeat on penalties, 0. He's actually thought about it, which is weird because I thought You work for Sevilla, right? You don't work for La Liga. You're not Javier Tebas.
No, and when you see how bad Sevilla have been and how his recruitment has stung the place.
Maybe you should spend less time planning tournaments.
Yeah.
Maybe. Would this be cool, though, as a fan?
Yeah, I like it, of course.
Maybe not in the summer in the US, because then you have the C teams.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think the idea would be good, because it's been... We've talked about this for a minute. Yeah, like, you know, okay, you can see the top teams because they face each other in the Champions League very often. But, you know, the team that finished 10th in Ligue 1 in the Premier League...
Would win between Almeria and Burnley?
Exactly.
I need to know.
Yeah, no, but because also when we keep saying like, oh, what league is the best, where this and that, you don't really see what league is the best from the top four.
No.
But more where that level is kind of in mid-table, second half of the table, and how those teams are. So, yeah, but like you said, Gabby, in the summer, when they're in pre-season, you would not get to see the strongest team in those games, which then would make that pointless.
You know what you do if you were to do this? And you probably shouldn't do this.
Never happen. We just tell you now. It's never going to happen.
But you could do this during the season. So,
well, I went.
Every Wednesday, with one game, right? No. It's not that hard. Even the top teams have Wednesdays off during the season, right? So every Wednesday, you schedule a game like this, right?
During the Champions League. So Champions League is happening on the Wednesday and those as well.
Sure, why not? I mean, why not play Almeria against Burnley on a Wednesday? You could do it.
Let me just think, who would watch that when on the same time you've got Real Madrid, PSG, Bayern, Man City?
Okay. The PSG fans wouldn't watch it. The Almeria and the Burnley fans wouldn't watch it. But you know what? Match day 5 and match day 6, let's say, okay, it won't be the case this time, but let's say City and Arsenal have already qualified. If you are a fan of an English club that's not playing that night, you're not really fussed about watching City or Arsenal. Hey, look, let me just root you on. Like, maybe. There are ways. I'll tell you, though, this would never happen for the reason that certain prize fights in boxing never used to happen. And that is, look, I think we both agree the Premier League, top to bottom, is probably better than La Liga, right?
Yeah, I think so.
But in a one-off game, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, with all the Premier League fanboys out there, Richard Masters' head and whatever, and his hair? No, if they do this, and then at the end of the year, it's like 11-9 to La Liga, right?
It will never happen.
This is why it'll never happen.
Yeah, as well.
Because the Premier League have everything to lose on this and nothing to gain from it. And I think also,
money, I guess,
and equally, Javier Tebas, what if it's like 18-2? The Premier League, right?
It would have looked good for La Liga.
What happens if you go out, you sell your rights, like, you know, La Liga, unlike anything else, we're just as good as the Premier League, or almost, right? And then they're like, wait, but they wipe the floor with you.
And the only win is Almeria against Burnley.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's true. The Turkish Super Cup is due to be played in Saudi Arabia on December 30th of this year, 2023. But both Galatasaray and Fenerbahce, who are in that Super Cup final, want it moved, Gab. Why?
So Galatasaray and Fenerbahce, by the way, obviously that is one of the bitterest rivalries in all of sports. They never agree on anything, but they agree on this. It's the 100th anniversary of Turkish independence, Kemal Atatürk and everything.
Yeah.
And they're saying this should be played on Turkish soil. Maybe even at the stadium that's named for Kemal Atatürk.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
I think obviously you can be cynical, say there's always more to it, and like, you know, they don't like the idea. You know, they play other Super Cups. Obviously, they play the Italian Super Cup there.
Yeah.
The Spanish Super Cup, are not the French Super Cup yet, but I'm sure the idea has been floated, right? There's also a sense, I think, maybe a little bit of resentment as well towards kind of selling off this other asset.
Yeah.
Because with the greatest respect to Turkey, and there might be some political things going on there as well. You know, this isn't like, oh, La Liga needs to sell itself, so let's go play to the Saudi audience. You know, it's still, I've got the Saudi Pro League. Am I suddenly going to, you know, get excited about Samsunspor against Besiktas if I'm there and I've got Benzema on my doorstep, right? So all these things put together suggest to me there's more going on. I think it should be about the fans and the clubs.
I agree.
And I don't know how much money they're getting, but I hope that they rethink this.
Yeah.
Nantes historically have a great youth academy.
They do, Gab.
So I guess maybe the crowd that they got for a recent game isn't that surprising, Jules, or is it?
No, but still, because we are used to those, youth league, like, so the Champions League for the under-19s, right, being played in small stadium usually. That's where they are, where the reserve teams play. But this time they decided, you know what? Nantes, as in the main team, the first team, are not playing in Europe this season. They were last season, but not in Europe this season. And there was clearly a lot of appetite from their own fans for the youth league and this Nantes under 19 very talented team. So they said, let's try.
Wait, are they playing in the
La Beaujoire Stadium? So the first.
Let's say, but what competition is this?
The youth league.
The Champions League youth.
Yeah,
league.
Because they are the right. French champions. So sometimes you've got teams right. that even if the first team is not qualified in Champions League, are still playing it, and they got 12,000 fans.
That is tremendous.
So then beating Helsinki on Wednesday, which I think is really remarkable. Great work from them. They have a really good team. For a long time, the academy, as you said, was one of the best, if not the best in France. Then he went through a bad patch a bit, like the club overall anyway. But he's coming back. And with that kind of support, imagine being an 18-year-old. And
playing in front of 12,000 people.
Yeah, it's remarkable. So, you know, well done to them, even for the idea and then for all those fans turning up. It was great. It's a Rome derby this weekend, Gab. And with such level-headed characters as Jose Mourinho and Mauricio Sarri, it's not surprising, really, that the build-up has been really calm, respectful.
100%. So, you know, Sarri, who I think at this stage is just obsessed with fixture lists and calendars because yeah. it's all that he talks about. He comes out and he says, it's going to be tougher for us because we got to play Feyenoord and they're really good and we're playing in the Champions League, whereas Roma have the equivalent of a friendly match against Slavia Prague. Now, first of all, Maurizio, you're playing at home on Wednesday.
Tuesday.
You have a whole 24 hours...
Even Tuesday, no? It was even Tuesday, no?
That's right. Sorry,
Tuesday.
So you got 40 more hours to prepare this game than Roma do. And you're playing at home. Yeah, Feyenoord are good, but you're playing at home. Okay, so enough with this complaining about your fixture list. But then, you know what? Mourinho doesn't need me to defend him because he can defend himself. And Mourinho, of course, replies by saying, said, you know, it's ridiculous. He's disrespecting Slavia Prague because all of a sudden Mourinho really cares about Slavia Prague. And he says, and I quote, "I always respect my opponents. It's the difference between someone who has won 26 titles and someone who has won only a few." Yeah, I wonder which of the two has won 26 titles and which one's won only a few.
Yeah, and only a few. Is it just two, no? Or maybe
I don't know, but like, yes, Mourinho, you have won much more than Maurizio Sarri. That is not what makes you right. I love the fact you never stop reminding us of how much he's won. You know, maybe Maurizio Sarri has managed Porto and Chelsea under Abramovich and whatever else, which for longer than he did because he did it too. Look, I say this in a context where Mourinho is 100% right. Like, Sarri might do well to STFU on this one and stop banging on about the calendar, the fixture list, the conspiracy. What, you think UEFA, like, purposely set it up so they play Slavia Prague? And by the way, Slavia Prague are a professional football team.
Yeah, they're
playing. Roma playing in the... You know why, by the way, you know why Roma playing in the Europa League this season?
Yeah, because they were worse than Lazio last season.
Or is it even the Conference League? I don't even remember.
No,
so, it's because they're worse than Lazio last season,
exactly.
Right? So, stop complaining about them. honestly, it's really, really difficult.
That derby is going to be so good.
Between the things these two guys say.
You can't miss it.
I'm so psyched for this game. Fernando Santos, who coached Portugal at the World Cup, says Cristiano still hasn't talked to him after Santos decided to drop him during the World Cup. Does this surprise you, Jules?
I mean, you know, players, especially I think of certain caliber and a certain ego, don't forgive easily at all. So I think the pain of having been benched in the World Cup and the way the World Cup ended overall, I think for Cristiano, which was always going to be his last one as well, would have hurt him, I'm sure. But is that enough to ruin or stop a relationship that's been going on for many years between him and Santos? They had a special bond.
They won the Euros together,
obviously,
as you know, with Cristiano acting as Fernando Santos's assistant when after getting injured in the final.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a bit petty, no?
Yeah, I do also wonder, like, Cristiano's not your ordinary footballer. Like, once Fernando Santos is out of his life, is he being petty or is he just saying, like, I live in Saudi Arabia now.
Yeah.
What am I going to talk to him about?
Yeah, they don't FaceTime every day, but I don't know, like...
I don't know. Fernando Santos doesn't seem like the most fun guy in the world. So I don't know.
That's true. Talking about fun guys, Phil Neville has been appointed coach of the Portland Timbers. But Gab, not everyone is happy with that choice. And it's not just because he obviously was not very good at Inter Miami.
Yeah, so there's one of the fan groups has asked the club to reconsider its decision, and they did. Everybody painted it that it's because of some things that Phil Neville tweeted back in 2011 about women's football that were considered to be sexist and highly disrespectful to women.
Yeah.
They also said it's also because of the job he did at Inter Miami, which people forget that part of it, right? Look, I believe in second chances. Phil Neville tweeted what he did in 2011 when he was younger and less wise. He faced all the same scrutiny in 2018 when he was appointed coach of England women's team.
Yeah.
When he said those tweets were wrong then, they're wrong now. He's apologized. I don't know what they want Phil Neville to do at this point, right? But build a time machine and never tweet that again? I think once you recognize your mistake, once you go and you work in the women's game, you're showing that you do not have this massive sexist preclusion. Now, that said, this is also a club because obviously it's, you know, Portland Timbers, Portland Thorns, Merritt Paulson, the creepy sporting director's name, who left. This is also a club where has a history of abuse towards women. So I could see themselves wanting to distance it. But to lump Phil Neville in with that, I think Phil Neville's done everything he can. I don't know what more you want from him.
Yeah.
So I do have a little bit of sympathy for him. All right, Jules, that brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Monday.
Yes.
Because there's a big, big weekend of football coming up. The Rome Derby, Chelsea and City.
Yes,
how about that?
On Sunday.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.